Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooks, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and we have a double portion today, a double hitter on Homeopathy Radio, because I made a mistake, and I only scheduled 15 minutes earlier today, and I thought, well, let's go ahead and schedule another 15 minutes, and we can talk a little bit more about Hahnemann's Organon of Medicine and understand the kinds of medical environment in which he was living in his day and whether it is even much different today with the kinds of treatments that are being given for patients in their illnesses and whether they are becoming weaker or we are strengthening their vital force. And I also let you know that there is a guest caller in, Marilyn Friedman from Canada. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Debbie.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Great. Yes, I can. There may be a little delay on the line because the internet works that way, but I do hear you. Thank you for calling in and being a live guest.
And, my pleasure.
Good. So you had been listening a little bit earlier. I was talking about pushing buttons, and we've got to push a lot of buttons around here to get things to work. But buttons can be annoying sometimes, and it's all in the way that we respond to them. And we just take it as it is and do the best we can with whatever we're given. I wanted to bring to the attention of nurses the many wonderful blogs and forum discussions going on. One is by Dr. Rajneesh Kumar Sharma, and he has posted one on inimical remedies, those remedies that we have thought do not go together well, that aggravate each other if they are given in a certain sequence or out of sequence or anything of that nature. And there's a great discussion trying to understand how that works. And we want to thank Dr. Sharma for that. Also, we have Dr. Shalandra Momgain, who has been posting almost every day some wonderful cured cases and the lessons that he learns from his patients and the treatments. And he's put in a brand new one today called Oversensitive to Every Medicine. And I think this is something very common today for individuals who feel that they are, I think there's even a name for that for people. It's called environmental sensitivity. And I thought maybe I would read just a paragraph of his blog. It says, in childhood, we read stories of queens and princesses so oversensitive who used to faint from the smell of flowers. We thought that this phenomena is merely a product of imagination. But during his homeopathic practice, he has met people who are oversensitive, in general terms, allergic to certain things or certain circumstances. And he gives a number of instances and examples. He says one gentleman who was an asthmatic told him that his trouble from clouds, so much so that he is in his bedroom very early in the morning and a small cloud gathers on the horizon. he gets an attack of difficult breathing. He predicts that there is some cloud in the sky. And Marilyn, do you remember yesterday we were reading about meteoric effects and how people can be affected by that? And that was a miasm?
That's right, right. They're affected by a low barometer.
Right. And so he is talking about this in an actual case, instance of someone who is really super sensitive. And then he says another person was committed that he gets an attack of bronchitis when there is any cloud in the sky. Another person once told that he was very allergic to the ribbed gourd, the loofah plant, the one that you use to scrub in the shower. He told them that during its season, the patient could not even go out into the vegetable garden. Not only this, he informed him that if somebody put vegetable in the room in a bag without even his knowledge, he would get a severe attack of bronchitis as soon as he entered the room. Well, wow, they're really having to do with breathing, plants and breathing, or clouds and breathing. It's very interesting, the effects. And then it says the most unusual thing happened with him that was up into the, so he's telling a personal story. Since the young age, he grew the gourd plant called the loki at home in his village and ate the vegetable with perfect impunity. Gee, I didn't know about eating the gourd, that particular gourd. I keep thinking of it as only a something for cosmetics, but I guess you do eat it. And he said, but after an appendectomy in 1962, a change took place in his constitution and he became allergic to it. If he happened to take the vegetable, even in a small quantity, it would cause a severe colic and gastralgia. And after his duodenal bypass in 1978, it caused intestinal hemorrhage, causing severe anemia whenever a little quantity of this vegetable was taken by chance. Otherwise, he was in good health. And this was a very unique oversensitiveness of his vital force to the living organism. And he goes on to give more stories and more cases, and I think we could take a good look at that story and see what kinds of sensitivities all of us have to different things in our environment, in our foods, and why in today's world there is oversensitivity to things like peanuts. My daughter is not even allowed to send her child to school with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich because in the class might be allergic to it. Now,
am I interrupting you, Debbie?
I'm going to let you speak now. Go ahead and say something good.
I was just going to say that, you know, when we were growing up, we never heard of anybody being allergic to peanuts. And
That's true.
Yeah, this is a new phenomenon. And it's very interesting because I do have patients who come to me, and they have all kinds of sensitivities. And in this particular article by Dr. Memgain, you know, he actually is talking about cuprum and how sensitive cuprum is. And I know that in the past, I've had, you know, patients who have this sensitivity to light. You know, they prefer the curtains drawn. They can't take too much light, and I think that's in stramonium. So in our repertoire, we have a lot of remedies that have these different sensitivities.
That is true, and a lot of remedies that are sensitive to light. All of those that have the hyoscine chemical in it, like belladonna, is extremely, it's called photophobic, and we do have many sensitivities to all different kinds of things, and many people are allergic or hypersensitive to flowers, to perfume, to certain things that are pollen, and as he said, it's called allergies to these supersensitives, and even patients, when they take their remedy, they could be super sensitive, and we have to be careful on how we the method in which we give it to them. And
you know how I give it when they're very sensitive. I give an LM solution.
Right.
And sometimes they'll double dilute it so that it makes sure that
That's
there's no
right.
aggravation.
Right. We are thinking in such small minimum doses, and yet even these minimum doses for the one who is super sensitive to the vibrational matching energy, they can initiate some kind of reaction in response by the vital force to that. And we actually want to see a response. We want to see a healing response. So should we go back over here and read the aphorism for today? I was just reading aphorism number 74 and into the fact that they, in age, they were using larger and larger and increasing doses of all the remedies, that medicinal agents or things that would cause a change in the, you know, such like mercurial ointment, and, you know, we still do put silver nitrate into the baby's eyes and to use iodine, and a big one he often uses as an organon is opium. And here we do use, many people take valerian roots to calm nerves. And malaria is really on the upswing, and quinine has always been used, the cinchona. And it is an excellent homeopathic remedy. So even itches are back in style. And they do help people. I've seen many, many videos on YouTube that show the use of leeches for helping wounds heal. So it could be used maybe as a palliative to take care of something, but then homeopathy has to come in there and really help the vital force for the individual, that they don't continually have these aches or eruptions or irritations that come back, so they're interested. So let's see. Do you want to say anything about aphorism number 74?
Well, I know you're reading from a different version of the Organon. I've got Wenda Brewster O'Reilly's in front of me.
Okay. Does she say something different?
Her comment. I like her comment. Right. Which is,
okay.
Chronic diseases caused by prolonged violent allopathic treatment are the most incurable.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah.
It's very interesting because I don't know about anybody else, but I find that when somebody comes to me with a lot of, that they've been on a lot of medicine, it's like a jigsaw puzzle. And you have to, you know, figure out what the symptoms are that belong to them and what the symptoms are that belong to the medicine. And it's quite a process. And sometimes when you get them off their medicines, they feel better already. So
mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know if you have that kind of those comments in the Organon that you're reading.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
He does say it gets, it adds another, it weakens the vital force by not using a similimum, but using an antipathic, which was in the previous aphorisms, and that it does make it much more difficult to move into a curative state. So, yes, he does say that. Also, I noticed that he said that they used hunger diets back then, and many of the research today you will be reading that the less you eat, the longer you live. I don't know what that has to do with it, but I thought that was something that we're learning about the human body, that we probably overeat quite a bit, and we don't need to take so much in order to be. He also says that no intelligent man can see in it anything medicinal or medicinally helpful. Real medicines even if chosen blindly and administered to a patient, may at times prove of benefit in a case of sickness because they may accidentally have been homeopathic to the case. And that's something that he's repeated numerous times to Organon, that by chance, Western medicine comes along with a remedy that is working, and it's working well, and it's because it is assimilable. But they don't recognize the principle, and they're just, it's just happenstance and not intentional. Okay? And I also mentioned it a little bit earlier in the earlier show that inflammation is something that researchers and physicians are really looking into very highly, that inflammation is, that's why they're using antioxidants to reduce inflammation today. And so this is a nutritional approach, a supplemental approach, but it is not an energetic approach toward reducing inflammation, which can cause all myriad of illnesses. Rheumatism, arthritis, maybe even lupus, all different autoimmune diseases. And that is a problem today. More and more people are having autoimmune disease. You know, very often we think that the life is in the blood, and this is traditional throughout history. People have believed this, and here, Hahnemann is saying that no man, no sick person has ever too much blood or too much strength. On the contrary, every sick man lacks, otherwise his vital energy would have prevented the development of the disease. So, in other words, we know our bodies, all of our bodies are constantly producing like cancer cells, but our immune system handles it. Takes care of it. Our vital force is strong enough that we don't notice anything going on within. And he's saying when you are strong, you're not going to notice any derangement. It's only when you are a sick person and you do not, and you're weak and you don't have the strength that you're going to, your vital force is going to be able to handle these kinds of things that are imposing itself or attacking itself on the body.
You know, Debbie?
Comment? Yes.
So when somebody fasts, right, the body, instead of being busy digesting the food and figuring out where to put everything, the vital force has a chance to get that person healthy by working through the blood, through the lymph system, and through all the organs to help, you know, bring that person back to health, because the body isn't busy with figuring out what to do with all the food coming in, right? It's like it gives that part a rest so that something else can start to work. Does that make sense what I just said?
Right.
It's interesting.
Yes, it did. It did make sense. And what we think about is in the evening time, we're supposed to reduce the amount of intake of food. We're not supposed to eat before we go to sleep because that is the time when the body is healing, the body is resting, recuperating, rejuvenating. And I have just written a blog all about sleep and rejuvenation yesterday. And one of the things is, you don't want the energy going into the digestive system. You want it to go into rejuvenation and replenishing your so if you think about the 24-hour cycle, that is part of that cycle. Now, if you're sick, often you've heard, feet of fever and starve a cold and feet of fever? What's the one?
I'll have to look it up. I don't remember.
It's one of those. And really, so when you're sick, you want to nourish yourself with wholesome foods. And depending on your illness, what it is that you need. Do you need chicken soup? Do you need applesauce? Do you need something light and digestible? Do you need something rice if you have diarrhea? Do you need, you know, for binding? So there are nutritional modes of support healing process in addition to an energetic approach, which is the city. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just going to add one thing to it, is that I could add more, but I'll add one thing. When I've got women who are menopausal and they say to me, I you know, I'm waking up all night with hot flashes, I ask them,
mm-hmm.
how much, when do you eat? When's your last meal? When do you eat dinner? What time? Mm-hmm. What kind of food are you eating? And then if I make the suggestion, eat at 5 and, you know, make the dinner the lightest meal that you have, right? Eat your heaviest meal at lunch and see how that goes. A lot of time they'll come back and they'll say, you know what, I don't have so many hot flashes. I'm not waking up in the middle of the night with hot flashes, because a lot of people think that menopause means hot flashes and they attribute it to menopausal symptoms. Where in reality, they're just eating too much too late at night.
Fascinating. That's good. So we can take care of it through lifestyle tradition for thinking ahead of when and what we're eating, and it can make a big difference in how we're feeling.
Yeah, and the other
and
thing
just like
is,
you were telling. Yes, go ahead.
I was telling what?
You were telling me yesterday about your breakfast.
Yeah, oatmeal and egg whites.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, you say you mentioned chicken soup. When, you know, what does your body need, right? How do you nourish it? And I wrote, I did a newsletter for my patients years ago about chicken soup. They've done all kinds of studies on chicken soup. They did studies
mm-hmm.
on homemade chicken soup, all the way through all the different packaged chicken soup.
Mm-hmm.
If I can mention, even Lipton's chicken soup was in the study that they did. And they found that chicken soup is antibacterial, antiviral.
Yes, it is. It's called Mother's Penicillin.
Yeah.
It's natural penicillin.
That's
and
right.
And unfortunately, today, the way that our food, our animals are prepared, there's probably too much hormones and such, unless you're getting an organic chicken. But yeah, it's flooding our earth and our bodies with all of those different extra components.
Well, you know,
so,
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know about
mm-hmm.
the states, because I'm not up here. But for those people who, you know, they say they can't afford organic, there are also the poultry is you can find called traditionally raised, which means
mm-hmm.
that there's no antibiotics in them, that they're, you know, free range chickens, and they're just, you know, they haven't been fed anything. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've got that down there, or if it's just organic and, you know, chickens that have been given, you know, steroids and antibiotics.
Well, you do have to call up or know the person, the farm that is raising the animals, because I even once called a producer and I asked about whether they gave antibiotics, and what they said was, yeah, even though it's called organic, they do give it an antibiotic at some life, but they will stop giving the antibiotic like a certain number of days before the slaughter of the animal. So that's why they consider it to be
organic,
hormone free, or I don't know if it's. I know that it's considered to be antibiotic free, just because they have removed giving it during the last certain number of day production. Isn't that interesting? So there's a lot going on, and, you know, we're talking about chickens and food And we just had in the United States a huge salmonella outbreak, and millions of chickens are affected. And even in the government, they were proposing mandatory vaccinations for all chickens so that they would not be susceptible to salmonella poisoning toxicity, because they do that in the UK. And I believe there was an outcry, and they're not going to do it, but I'm going to keep my eye on that bit of news and possibly do another blog on that. Well, 4 minutes left in the show. How about if we read aphorism number 75? It's very, very short. It says, "These inroads on human health by the allopathic non-healing art, more particularly in recent times," gee, sounds like it's 2010, "are of all chronic diseases the most deplorable, the most incurable," and I regret to add that it is apparently impossible to discover or to hit upon any remedies for their cure when they have reached any considerable height. And I was thinking, I think that Kaviraj is the one who said that Hahnemann only had 70 remedies available for treatment, and today we have so many thousands that perhaps he would change his mind. Perhaps he would say maybe there he would hit upon some remedy that would make a difference in a person's life.
Well, I think that there's also, you know, there is a way to not palliate, but at least, you know, if they come off of the allopathic medicines, that, as I said, they feel better anyway, because they've gotten rid of a lot of the side effects from the allopathic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can palliate, we can do what we need to do with them. Maybe not cure, but they do feel better on homeopathy. They do feel better, you know, once they're sort of weaned off.
That's good. It would be great if we really had some solid statistics from people as to their rate of cure, their rate of, you know, improvement. A lot of people will drop out from homeopathic treatment, and some people actually won't be getting better because we have not been able to find a match, just as Hahnemann is speaking here, that sometimes people are taking so many medications that it's very difficult for them to withdraw from them. And sometimes we're able to support the individual with other kinds of things, lifestyle changes, stress reduction, breathing, meditation, yoga, all those kinds of things to improve their situation so that they can get off of medications with their physician's guidance.
And you know what, Debbie? What we do for them is that we help them make themselves responsible, which is a very big thing.
Okay. Yes, I think it is the fact that today people are wanting the power of their health in their own hands, and they're not giving it away to their physicians. And next show, we will be reading Aphorism 96. I want to thank everyone for listening, and I especially want to thank you, Marilyn, for calling in and being here with me today. It's been a lot of fun, and we're going to say goodbye to all the listening audience. So until the next time, take your Organon off the shelf and read it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Debbie. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopath Debbie Bruck on Homeopathy World Community's Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.